The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Greetings, everyone. I must tell you the thing I am going to be thankful for most this year is RMNA technology. It's so remarkable what has happened with the COVID vaccines. It's kind of hard to absorb it. And it's not just the news of the day or the week or the quarter or the year. The more I read about it, and you can go look it up. There was an article back on November 17th by Peter Loftus, Jared Hopkins, and Bojan Panzevsky in the Wall Street Journal about the mRNA vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer and BioNTech developed, and the fact that not only will it stop COVID in its tracks as distribution proceeds, it will. This new technology, this new science will advance into cancer treatment and other disease treatment. And it's happened in lightning speed. And it's being approved in lightning speed. I actually believe Operation Warp Speed will be the single greatest achievement for humanity of the Donald Trump administration years. Brought about by crisis, yes. Obscured by political debate, of course. But the reality of what has happened in 7 months is just astonishing. That's what I'm thankful for. I'm also thankful for this audience. I usually start the Angel Tree appeal at the week after Thanksgiving. And here we are in November, and I'm asking you to please head over to HughHewitt.com and find the Angel Tree banner. And that's because it's a lot of work to line up families and select just the right presents, arrange for kids to receive a personal note from their parents who are incarcerated. It costs $22 per child. All the church patios, or not all of them, but almost every one of them are closed. And so we have to do it online. And hundreds, indeed thousands of you have now stepped up. Angel Tree volunteer, but we need tens of thousands. We need tens of thousands of people to do what they would normally do on a church patio to do it online. Angel Tree volunteers like Dawn from Dallas know that every donation, large or small, is important and has the potential to change the life of a prisoner's child as much as these mRNA vaccines have changed science. Here's Dawn.
Personalize that. The little bit that you give, if we all give something, we are better together. If every single one right now, even if you are impacted in some stretch, the more that you give, the more you receive. I always say you can't outgive God. So you give without knowing where it's going to go. Just pay it forward and see the results, see the blessings that God will bring back into your life.
Now, I just believe she's absolutely true. Children of prisoners should not be left bereft at Christmas. Give them some joy. Go to HughHewitt.com, and the first thing you'll see over there will be a banner for Angel Tree. Give Christmas to the children of prisoners. $22 delivers that joy to one child. 220 to 10, 2,200 to 100. Please just be as generous as you can, because we do not have the conveyor belt of love that usually runs from church patio to child via the prison cell where the note is picked up. We got it all except the money, and the money needs to come in. Thank you for doing that. Yesterday, like every day, I need to play for you the number one quote for the Georgia runoffs on which the Republic depend. We have to watch those runoffs, because if, in fact, John Ossoff and the radical Raphael Warnock win, and John Ossoff is radical, he's just not as radical as Reverend Warnock, the Republic is going to shake. Here's Chuck Schumer laying out the Democratic plan. Cut number one. You've heard it.
Now we take Georgia, and then we change the world.
Yeah!
sorry, can you repeat that, Mr. Schumer?
Now we take Georgia, and then we change America.
On yesterday, I played for you. Well, actually, yesterday was Thanksgiving. I didn't play for you. Early this month, Reverend Warnock gave a sermon. It was discovered that Reverend Warnock gave a sermon in 2011. And I want to play for you the cut that matters from that sermon. And it has not been edited. This is live, Reverend Warnock, cut number 4.
America, nobody can serve God and the military. You can't serve God and money. You cannot serve God and mammon at the same time. America, choose ye this day whom you will serve.
You cannot serve God and the military. That is astonishing. All right, I'll come back to that. But first, I'm going to play you a little cheerful stuff. Matthew McConaughey and I caught up together again yesterday. And I want you, he's the author of Green Lights. It's a number one and number two bestseller on the New York Times. You just got to hear this interview. So I'm going to devote most of this hour to this. This is Matthew McConaughey on Green Lights. Let's go to that interview. So pleased to welcome back for an encore interview the author of Green Lights, Matthew McConaughey. In fact, he's now Matthew Gone and Come Back Again. Hey, I am so glad that you agreed to this, Matthew. The first one botched up so badly on the audio, we were able to transcribe it and show it, but it didn't really make the mark I wanted it to make. But Green Lights at the top of the New York Times best-selling list is doing pretty well without it.
Yeah, well, you know, trickery. No one can explain it. Audio, visual, if we get them both going, we're lucky sometimes. But no, my pleasure to come back on and chat with you again. And What do we got? Yeah, the book's doing well, and I've been having a great time on the tour, on the road, talking, listening to people, how it translated, how they related to it.
Well, it's
been excellent.
It's grabbing a lot of people. You know, in the radio business, I know my demo, which is 35 to 64, smart, hardworking, employed. Your demo's basically everybody. In fact, this is my second chance to embarrass my daughter. I wrongly said her favorite movie was Dazed and Confused when it's 10 days. How to lose a guy in 10 days.
How to lose a guy in 10 days.
You know, you've got every person out there in America from 18 to 70, and I don't know how you do that. What do you put that down to?
Wow. You know, I didn't have a specific demographic that I was sort of chasing. I just sort of, you know, I said this to you, I believe, in our first longer conversation. Here's something I noticed in the writing of the book. The more subjective and more personal I got, the more I would look at it and go, you know what? I think it just became more relatable to more people. So on this tour, I'm hearing people from all ages, sexes, everything else, about how they're personally relating to stories in the book. And they're all relating to different things. A scenario, a story that I've been in, where they go, that didn't exactly happen to me like that, but something similar happened, and here's how I handled it. Or, oh, how you handled it, I'm going to try that next time. Or, oh, I see where you failed, McConaughey, and you explain why. And you know what? Understanding why I failed in the same way has helped me. Or someone goes, I really love the poems. Or someone says, I love the prayers. Or someone says, I love the bumper stickers. So it's thankfully relating and translating to quite a few, to all demographics right now.
Now, the advantage of doing a second interview is that, you know, I read it right before the interview, make my notes and my outline. Now I got to marinate it in it for 10 days, and I have a theory on why it's so well-received by so many different people. It is almost wholly devoid of grievance, and I'm so tired of grievance, Matthew. You're just not mad at anybody except one moment with your mom. Were you aware of that when you were writing this?
I've got my grievances, but I've learned to move on from, if I can't be constructive with them, I've learned to move on. I mean, even the deal with my mom, we had a grievance for 8 years, but I knew that was going to have, that we were going to mend our fences and come back together. I just didn't know when, and it took 8 years. I didn't quit loving her during that time. I didn't quit caring for her. We were just estranged, and our relationship was. I don't know what's the value of holding on to a grudge or a grievance? I don't see what's constructive about it. I mean, you know, there's plenty of times to keep your enemies closer than your friends, but it's good to know, but you don't have to, you know, waste your time. I tell that story about Hollywood, the joke in Hollywood that I got when I realized 7 years into Hollywood, it's not personal, it's business. Well, that allowed me to forgive all kinds of grievances and people that wouldn't answer my phone call when my movies weren't doing as well, but they were also people that I was very close friends with when my movies were doing well. I didn't take that personally either.
I wrote that. It's page 189. It's not personal. It's just business. You have to get the joke, and the joke is nothing is personal. I wanted to probe you on that. Did you not get a role that you really wished you'd gotten? I mean, that you still think about to this day?
No, Hugh, I've got to be honest. I'm pretty fortunate in everything that I passed on. I'd have no regret on anything I passed on. There was a movie that I did love that I was offered that I said no to, but I loved the movie, and that was L.A. Confidential.
Oh.
Curtis Hanson directed. It's a great movie, and that came to me right after I got famous as a Time to Kill. And so I write about it in the book that after that weekend of Time to Kill opened, all of a sudden I was being offered everything. Whereas 2 days before Time to Kill opened, I wasn't getting offered much of anything. And so I had in the affluence of scripts that were coming my way, I remember reading that and thinking it's really good, but I just don't have to do it. But then I saw the movie and I was like, ooh, that was a really good one.
Well, I'd be amazed if someone in your position doesn't have at least one that you wish you could get back. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll play you the rest of my conversation with Matthew McConaughey yesterday afternoon. And you'll enjoy it on the Friday after Thanksgiving as well. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Welcome back, America. When I sat down with Matthew McConaughey for the second time, I didn't get to play him again his favorite song, which is this. Actually, it's a more complicated story after Ring Green Lights. Let's get back to my interview with Matthew McConaughey from yesterday. I wanted to ask you about friends in Hollywood, if it's all business. You mentioned, I think at least twice, that Woody Harrelson, for instance, is your friend. Now, if everything is business and nothing is personal, how seriously do you take not just Woody Harrelson, but any Hollywood friendship? I mean, do they get to the level of a Texas friendship?
Well, sure. And what I mean by, I mean the game and the business of Hollywood, meaning the dealings in Hollywood. As I said, you know, the people that I hung out with and spent quality time with and that were heads of studios who all of a sudden, maybe 3 years later when my movies aren't doing as well, don't return my phone call. So that I go, okay, but none of those were like good friends like Woody. I'm not devoid of saying, I'm not saying don't take anything personal. I have relationships that are very personal. My friendship with Woody is very personal. He and I, we're much more personal than business. So I still have very personal relationships. I'm just really talking about the business of Hollywood and things that go on in life, careers, jobs, hirings, firings, when you get what you want, when you don't, people, the things people do that are not our close friends. I found it good to go, you know what? I'm going to tab it up to that just being business or where that person is in their life. I'm not going to put it on me.
Did any friend ever bury the hilt in your back, you know, 6 inches in? Did anyone ever do that to you that was a friend up until that moment?
No. You know what? I've never been stabbed in the back, never been stolen from. Never have I had a friend. Now, mind you, and I don't have 1,000 good friends. I have quite a few, but I can count them on both hands. So I don't let just anybody into my circle. I have a lot of acquaintances. I have a whole lot of people in Hollywood that we don't talk. I don't have their phone number, but damn, it's good to see you when we do. So I've never really put myself in a position maybe, nor had friends in my inner circle that picked my pocket, or stabbed that me in the back, or told stories out of school.
That's rare, Matthew. I'm curious, if you said to Camilla, love, I just got to get away for 3 to 5 weeks, and I got to go to the Isle of Skye and stay at the Three Chimneys, which is one of my favorite places on Earth, or maybe to Mali or whatever, and I'm not going to take Rooster, I'm not going to take Pat, I'm going to take X. Who's that, Matthew?
Ooh, right. I'd take Levi, my eldest son. He and I did a 14-day trip to Patagonia a couple years ago. And he's a good athlete, and he's a great travel companion. Now he's 12, so we're starting to get in that stage where we can kind of do things as buddies and father and son. So right now I would say I'm taking Levi because I'm really – he's coming into that learning what it is to be a young man, learning how responsibility today can give him freedom tomorrow, kind of learning how the world works, innuendo, what to take literally, what not to take literally. So I'd like to go on that trip with him.
Well, that is terrific. But if you're going to leave the boy at home because you just need some friend time, who's it going to be?
Who's it going to be then? Well, you said one earlier who's always a great travel partner, and that's Mr. Woody Harrelson. Look, if I spent 3 weeks on that aisle with Woody, I'd come back 10 years younger.
Huh?
You're with Woody, it's you get younger when you're around Woody. I get younger. The amount of laughter. Just you see the days and the weeks and the years just going off your calendar. You're going backwards and you get younger around that man.
It's terrific, isn't it? I just think Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights, is the best Christmas present. And the fact that it's number one on Amazon, number two on the New York Times bestselling list, and will stay there through the Christmas shopping season that is online, it's just terrific. Hey, don't forget the Christmas season is a season of joy, but not for everyone if they've got a mom or dad in prison. Over at HughHewitt.com, there is a banner. Whether today, on Black Friday, on every day leading up to Christmas, remember the children for whom joy is incomplete because mom or dad's in jail. And go to HughHewitt.com and click on that angel tree banner at the very top. You'll see it at the very top. It's got the Christmas tree. The church patios are closed, so the only way we reach these kids is through this radio show and through you going to HughHewitt.com, clicking on that tree. $22 serves one child, $220 serves 10, $2,200, and some of you can do it. Well, you serve 100 children. Thank you. I'll be right back with more Matthew McConaughey. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt talking with Matthew McConaughey right now about friendship. What are the qualities of friendship? I've been reading about this a lot, Matthew, and part of it is your book, Green Lights. It's got a lot of friends in it, but I've been reading about it since Montana in college. What are the qualities of it for you?
Well, for me, my best friends are ones that, you know, my life takes me around the world. I'm married and have 3 kids, so I can't, like, maintain the same friendships in the same way that I used to. Meaning if I want to take that trip to the aisle with Woody, I can't just say tonight, oh, great idea. Hugh had a great idea. I'm going to put my backpack. See, I'm leaving tomorrow morning. I have things I have to tend to. Now, my good friends understand that, and a lot of them are married and have children, so obviously they understand it. But, I mean, one of the great traits is running back into my good friends who I haven't seen in a while. And you just pick right back up where you left off. You don't have to sit down and go into that deep dive of, wait a minute, how have you been? You know, what have you, you know, you just pick it right back up. The other thing I think that my greatest friends do for me, and I try to do for mine, is promote the best and more of the best and truest in them. My good friends know me well. And if I'm being true to myself, they'll put gas on my fire. Huh. If I'm off track a little bit and I'm kind of, they'll back off and go, this is a wild, are you sure you're in for this? Is this not going against your grain of who you actually are? And then we discuss it. But they look out for me. And if they believe it's true, they, you know, they water that garden that I have. And I try to do the same for them, try to promote what I know makes them more themselves.
Yeah, now, Matthew McConaughey, that's a bit different. I live in D.C. and I breathe in D.C., and friendship is contingent in the Beltway. And you're saying it's not contingent in Hollywood when it's real.
No, I don't think it's contingent anywhere when it's real. It's contingent in Hollywood, as I said earlier, Well, you know, people are heat seekers. You know, the people got to, you know, need a product that's in demand to make money and make their overhead so they don't get fired from their job. I get it. And I've reconnected with some of those friends that were that maybe didn't return those phone calls or did, you know, back then. And I don't hold a grudge against them. But, I mean, a real friendship is not contingent on what side of your aisle is or what your denomination is or what your star meter in Hollywood is.
Well, I agree with that. I just think in D.C. it's rarer than extinct species. Let me talk to you about one narrow category. Sonny Bunch is the movie critic for my radio show, and he's a great critic, writes for The Bulwark. And he's very good at his craft. And I had another guy for 10 years, Emmett, the unblinking eye, good at his craft. You have to read this stuff as someone who's in it. Is there anybody in the business of film criticism who you admire for their craft?
Guy like Joe Morgenstern with Wall Street Journal. He has liked some of my work. He has liked some of my movies. He has not liked some and not liked me in some. But all that when he doesn't like it, he's constructive about it. Meaning I'll read bad criticisms and I can tell in the first line that, oh, this person had it in for me before they even saw the movie. They had already started this bad review before they saw the movie. So you know what? That's not really a criticism. That's that person's hang up. But when I can read somebody that has a good criticism, and Joe does, I think, a constructive criticism. And here's why I didn't like the movie. Here's why Matthew's performance didn't translate for me. I always learned something from it.
And is it something that you do? Will you study reviews from serious people after a film comes out in order to improve your craft? Because they're good at theirs?
Yes. Yes. I have done this. Look, obviously it's more fun to read a good review. And obviously when you do your work and I feel like I did it well and I read a good review, I think those people are smarter. But I went away 8 years ago and I had my publicist gather every bad review that's ever been written on my performances, which is almost 50 at the time.
That's not in the book.
It was a no, it's not. I didn't put it in there. Maybe it can be in the next one. I went away and read every single one and kind of learned more from the bad reviews in a way than I did from the good ones. You know, people that were maybe critics that didn't like a performance, a bad review that were actually fans of mine and were let down with the performance I did, but actually spoke to why. Some of them I agreed with, some of them I didn't. But each one I appreciated when they were, again, constructive. And a person explained why and what they didn't get from it. And then that's their own subjective call, and I can agree or disagree, but I can sure appreciate that their hand went to the page and the pen to write the critique in a constructive, critical way.
Now that is very mature. People are going to take that and run with it. Let me switch subjects on you. I want to go back to Dazed and Confused because 5 days into shooting Wooderson, you get a phone call and your dad has died. You're right, your knees buckled. And at the end of the grieving process in the Irish funeral, you're right, I resolved to become less impressed and more involved. I just would like you to explain to people who maybe haven't had to do that, I have, what it is like to lose the dad you love, and what do you have to do to get your bearings?
Yeah, well, I didn't think in my 21-year-old mind and position, being the son of my father, I didn't think my dad could die. I couldn't even consider it. He was 62 years young. He was the abominable snowman. Nothing could kill him.
Huh.
I mean, guy's never taken an aspirin in his life. He was a bear of a man and a huge heart and lots of energy. Well, he had a heart attack and his heart couldn't pump enough blood to his body.
He had a great going away. I mean, you describe it, people can read it for the surprise.
as good of a way as you can hope to ever leave this life.
Exactly.
My dad experienced. I'll leave that to the book read, but it was an incredible way that he went. And actually he called a shot and actually told his three boys, me and my two brothers, boys, when I go, I'm going to be making love to your mother. and he did. But so he goes and, you know, after all the late nights in the kitchen and crying and talking about who he was with my brothers and my mom and Then they said, you know, it's been 5 days. Get back to your job. Days confused. Go finish what you started. It's what Dad would want you to do. That's when that hit me. Be less impressed, more involved. Meaning, the man, the values and the strength and the courage of the man my father was to me was now physically gone. Well, I noticed immediately, oh, in some ways, Matthew, you've been relying on the fact that he's got your back. That he's above government, that he's above the law. If you stumble, he will always be there to pick you up. And all of a sudden, that thing you rely on, Matthew, is gone. So, okay, all these little things that he's been teaching you how to be a man that you've been kind of half-assed practicing but not really committing to, well, you better get committed to it now. And when I realized that, because I had to get committed to it because he was no longer there as my crutch to rely on, that's when I became less impressed, more involved. Meaning all the mortal things in life that I revered, I don't know, fame, people, money, success, they came down from reverence. They held on to my respect, but they came down to eye level, and I was looking them in the eye. All the things that I was patronizing in my life, condescending, sloughing off is not worthy of me, rose up to eye level. And I remember writing to myself, the world is flat. I see further and wider and more clearly. And my chin raised, my heart raised, and I stepped forward from that day on with much more courage as a young man.
Excellent part of the book. I want to close by talking about, I got three things left. After I interviewed the first time, Paul Begala sent me a note saying, you know, go Texas. Matthew is a great friend of Texas, et cetera. Now, I do a bunch of events with Paul, and I love to do them because it makes me look smarter and funnier. And because I'm arguing with him, because I'm on stage with him in a pro and con in front of investors and stuff like that, they think I'm right because they know he's wrong, but they still think I'm funny, et cetera. If you esteem him so much and you're kind of center right in the view of people, you could be governor of Texas. Are you ever going to run for anything?
I don't know. I mean, that wouldn't be up to the people more than it would me. I would say this. Look, politics seems to be a broken business to me right now. And when politics redefines its purpose, I could be a hell of a lot more interested.
You know, it's fascinating to me. It's a fascinating concept. Like Arnold did in California, some people get one shot. Now, you're the brand ambassador for Lincoln and Wild Turkey. If you were the brand ambassador for the U.S. for President-elect Biden, I'm just curious, what could you recommend that both Republican and Democrats could get behind?
Well, you know me. I've talked to you about it before. I want to get behind personal values to rebind our social contracts with each other as Americans, as people again, no matter what side of the aisle on, or as I said earlier, denomination. We have broken those social contracts. We don't trust each other. And that leads to us not trusting ourselves, which if that becomes epidemic, then we've got anarchy. So I'm all for the individual, and I think it's to make collective change that the individual needs to look in the mirror and say, how can I be a little bit better today? How can the selfish decision I want to make for myself correlate and also be the decision that's best for the most amount of people? There is a place where that decision lives all the time. It's hard to get to, but there is a place to make decision that's best for ourselves, but also be considerate of what that decision is for the most amount of people. Look, coming out of the election right now, we got to stabilize. This country's got to stabilize first before we start to say, okay, here's how we're marching out of this together forward.
100% agree. When Arnold ran, did you have a reaction to that? Did you think, that's a good idea, bad idea, or maybe I should do that someday?
No, I didn't have any. I remember my only reaction was like with Jesse Ventura in Minnesota. I was like, different people from the entertainment industry. Clint Eastwood had already been, I think, mayor before.
Right.
But it was like, you know, I remember thinking this, you know, people going, oh, the Terminator is going to be president or the Terminator is going to be the governor. And that was I saw the power of fame that, you know, and I mean, look, but that's already a question. And this is not speaking to how much I agreed or disagreed with Arnold Schwarzenegger's politics or not. But you look at president-elect that we just had, President Trump. Look, a lot of people that I know on the far left were in denial after he had become the president. And I remember saying, well, look, regardless of his politics, the first question, what do we say in America is successful? What do we give credit and respect to? Well, the top two things are money and fame. And I said, guys, just on a very base level, Trump has those. So I don't know why he should be so surprised that he got elected. Now, then came, you know, policies and the politics of the last 4 years, which have become, you know, you know more about him than just when he first came in as someone who was on TV and also had a lot of money. But, yeah, I remember when Arnold came out and then seeing Ventura up there, I was like, oh, there's different people in the entertainment zeitgeist that are getting into politics. You know, I still question how much you can really get done in politics. And I don't know if politics is my avenue to get what maybe I'm best equipped to get done.
Well, Texas is an interesting playing field. Come back for the last segment of my interview with Matthew McConaughey. Welcome back, America. Here's the conclusion of my interview with Matthew McConaughey about his bestseller, Green Lights. Penultimate question. You like a wager. Do you follow Barstool Sports at all?
I don't follow it, but I've been on there talking a few times.
All right. So you wager on intangibles. I always wager on the Browns, which is kind of stupid, but you always wager on intangibles. How do you talk about that Brett Favre at home when his dad just died. What? How do you even figure out which intangibles to figure on?
Well, I mean, I'm always, that's what I'm most interested in. I'm not as interested in the headline. I like going into the story and picking out a few things, a few one-liners that maybe really open up a secret to the subject that are usually on page 3 or 4. So I look past the headline of any wager pretty quickly and try to go say, oh, what are these intangibles, psychological intangibles? You know, star play, who's the person involved? What's their real purpose? Do they believe in what they're doing? Are they acting like one, or are they really being one? So also, you know, if you're looking at teams and careers, life, or football games, boy, to go be around a practice to see how people intangibles, you watch a sideline on a game. Look at the players, how they're commingling, the ones that are on the second string that aren't even on the field. Is their head in the game? Do they believe in the purpose of the entire team, even though they're not on the field in the first string?
Have you been watching Baker at all?
Not very much. I haven't watched much football at all. How's he?
He's got what you just talked about. He's got that in spades. Last question. Can you expand? You just reference it and you drop it. You never come back. 78 stitches on your forehead by a veterinarian. It sounds like an episode from Yellowstone. What's that all about?
So we're in Navarre Beach, Florida. I think it's around 1985. I'm out riding jet skis in the bay in the afternoon. I wreck on my jet ski, go down. As I come up, my nephew was riding behind me racing. He, boom, skips off my head.
Oh,
I'm knocked out. The next thing I know, I'm getting sort of dragged up by two men. One of them, my dad, and the guy, and the other one is the guy who ran the jet ski sort of facility there. They're walking me out of the bay, and there's all these people on the bay looking at me with horrified looks on their faces. And I'm obviously in shock because I'm like, hey, everybody, no, I'm okay. Well, my dad, who is a real sort of, hey, if you're hurt, just rub it kind of guy, was really kind of hustling me to the car, taking whatever was wrong with me more seriously than I was. And I remember this, we're in the car, and we had one of those right after, you know, those late afternoon Florida monsoons where it rains hard for about 20 minutes.
Okay.
It starts raining really hard. And I'm riding shotgun, and I'm sitting there just chatting away with him, and he's kind of got a concerned look on his face. I reach up to the vanity mirror to have a look at my head, and I'll never forget this. This hand reaches across and grabs my hand and stops me from looking at the mirror, and it was my dad. And it hit me right there that, oh, my dad doesn't want me to see it? It must be bad. And right about that time, this big lump went up in the back of my neck, and it started to hurt, and I started crying. And Dad pressed the pedal to the metal and was doing 90 miles an hour down this two-lane highway in Navarre Beach, Florida. He pulls in this place right off the highway, hops out, comes in there, and says, Guy comes out. He says, "You the doctor?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Sew him up." And he goes, "But sir, I'm a veterinarian. I don't sew humans. I sew animals." He goes, "I don't care. Sew him up." And that veterinarian sewed up my forehead so well. One of the best sew jobs I've ever seen. You can barely even see the scar.
I can't see it. I'm looking at your picture. I cannot see it.
It's up in my top right. It goes from the center of my forehead back to the right above my ear, high on the crown of my head, into my hairline.
Wow.
78 stitches.
Well, that's a record.
I bet.
On that note, Green Lights is a huge success, Matthew McConaughey. Keep coming. If you want a triple play on the Hugh Hewitt Show, just call me, because it's been great fun and continued success to you.
I appreciate it, Hugh. Enjoy the talk.
Be well. It's a great interview. Green Lights is a great book. Everybody is enjoying it. I appreciate it. We'll post all that along with McConaughey Hewitt 1.0, which was a great interview as well, but we had to subtitle it because the audio got scrambled by the Skype gods. It's over at HughHewitt.com. When you go there, you'll see two things. You'll see the Verify the Vote petition up top. They now have two tranches of votes in Georgia that were missed, and other stuff throughout since Election Day. Stuff has been missed. Didn't change the result, but we do need to audit the vote. Verify the Vote is up there. You also need to go and think about prison fellowship. Maybe you already gave when I first started talking about this, and you've been thinking about it since. You've been doing a lot of online shopping. There are 2.7 million children with one or more parents in jail, one or both parents in jail. And prison fellowship ministers to hundreds of thousands of them every single year. Can't do it this year, at least not as much as they did because of the church patios being closed or limited. So it's up to you online. And I ask you to Hugh Hewitt, find that angel tree banner at the very top with the Christmas tree. And if you were inspired by Matthew McConaughey and his good humor, remember Montaigne said, "A constant cheerfulness is the surest sign of wisdom." We'll be cheerful in your giving and generous as you can be at Angel Tree Banner at HughHewitt.com. Come right back here for the next Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.